Right, welcome back to Sheep Farm, another podcast. Joining me tonight is our Chris as normal. You got a bottle of wine there, Chris?
Good evening. Yes, I've got a bottle of wine. Yeah, I'm not going to open it yet. Let me in a little bit.
What is it?
Primitivo from Puglia.
What's that?
From Puglia. Favorite.
And joining us tonight again, I think it's fourth time now, is Mark Nester.
Where's my bottle of wine?
You have to supply your own, you tight jock.
Can you pass it through the? Surely you can pass it through the internet.
Oh, there you go. I'll pass you a glass through.
Yeah, you need your VR Ed Frying headset on to have a virtual glass.
Yeah, don't tempt them. Somebody might be listening in, going, "What a great idea that is!"
Yeah, they can get lost. Great idea. You get lost, yeah. Right, where should we start? Somebody sent an email in today, right? It were a comment, actually. He said, me and my wife went on holiday to Greece, came back on Sunday. Never had jabs, never wore masks, never been tested. But as the plane, I don't know why I had to put that back a bit in, but he did. As the plane reached Gatwick, those Extinction Rebellion nutters were flying drones around the airport.
What?
Yeah, the plane flew around for half an hour, and then the pilot said it was running out of fuel and had to divert to Luton. We sat in the runway for 3 hours, waiting to be refueled, and then flew back to Gatwick because the drones had gone then.
How are they allowed to get away with that?
Well, his opinion was that this is all designed to leave holidaymakers with the idea that flying just ain't worth it.
It's more drama, isn't it? Yeah.
And if anybody's been to an airport, me and my wife were looking at going away, and we said, we can't go to Manchester. Actually going to Manchester Airport is the worst experience in your life. It's horrible. It's an awful place to go.
What do you mean?
Well, when you're going through check-in, you're fine, right? But actually going through where the security is, my experience about 7 or 8 months ago, I think we were October when I went to Malta, the queue were massive. There were no reason for it.
They were
blaming people for leaving liquid in the bag. And in reality, when I got to the queue, the person said, "Yeah, we've got all trainees on the sort of like X-ray machines." So they had all trainees on. That's why the queue were back, because they didn't know what they were doing. So they're pulling stuff out they thought were liquid, and they had this guy going around shouting, telling everybody to look in the bags, talking to them like kids. Yeah.
In terms of what looks like it's going on. And it's becoming more clear every day, isn't it? Because they overplay their hand. They always overplay their hand because they're so cocky. They can't help it.
They really do.
But they're out there now, and it's like, oh, not me. It's like, it is you. And I'm convinced that in the 60s and the early 70s anyway, definitely the 50s, the British industrial working class went most usually on holiday to places pretty nearby. They went to Skegness if they were in Lincolnshire. They went to Scarborough. They went to,
Aberdeen. The various,
Aberdeen. Why not? I knew you'd throw something stupid in.
And Blackpool.
And Bognor Regis and all that. So went all really these lovely places that had been, whatever they'd been in the Victorian time, they'd had the day, and then we got the cheap flights and we got hotels and somehow, Spain and maybe later on Greece, but they got a chance to make some money for themselves and change. I think from that point onwards, there was a group of people who were really miffed. It's like, I'm sorry, you're not meant to be leaving Butlins and Skegness to fly to Benidorm. You know what you're going for? And they're like, well, we're going because actually you get some sun this time. Yeah. But otherwise, we want the same food, the same drink, the same experience. We want nightclubs, we want that. And they're like, don't you want Spanish culture? And they're like, yeah, we just said we want.
Yeah, just the red lion.
Sorry, the red lion, maybe with a little Spanish flag on the top of it. Yeah. But it better be selling good tetleys. And it's so the elite. I think the elite have been looking in, going, this is not right. And you can be a bit sympathetic to it, because it's like, if you go to Spain, it'd be nice to see a bit of Spain and a bit of culture and appreciate where you are, but. I don't think they even think like that. I think they were furious. I think they're like, these people should not be in the sky.
Is that either that, Matt, or it was all planned all? I mean, this is going pure conspiracy.
Well, go on,
it was all planned all along just to pull the rug from under us, as everyone used to go to Torremolinos every year.
To let you know exactly where you really stand in the world.
I'll tell you something funny, right? I was once on holiday. I forget where. I think it was in Greece. I was on the balcony just having a glass of wine or whatever.
That's a surprise.
guy comes out at the side of me and he says, I think he was from St. Helens or somewhere up north. And he said, I got chatting to him anyway. He goes, have you been eating out a lot here? And I said, yeah, I'm going to try that restaurant down. And I remember it was called Sebastian, same as my son. I said, I'm going to try that restaurant. I've heard good things about it. He goes, I've been in there. It's shite. I said, oh, really? Why? And he goes, I got one over there. It's called whatever. Brilliant. Food's brilliant. Waitresses are brilliant. Service is brilliant. All drinks are fantastic. I said, oh, what do you usually eat then? Local Greek stuff. He goes, no, just sausage and chips. Anyway, I'm going to listen to you, right? Where I should go fucking eat. And all you eat is sausage. You find out, you find 5 hours away from your home to eat sausage, egg, and chips every night.
Well,
I'm not judging anyone. I'm just saying.
No, of course not. No, and no, we're not saying that at all, are we? We're not saying that. We're saying that, you know, by the way, these people who are, you know, certainly really uncomfortable, with those types of ways of being abroad. I'm sorry, if you looked at what they were doing, where they were going, and what they were up to, it was just a more refined version of not embracing the culture.
Well,
they went to top hotels. They went to islands that, you know, where the hell are these islands? I mean, how do you even get to them? They're going to all sorts of places. Oh, where are you going? I'm going to Bahamas. Oh, we're going to the Seychelles. Oh, we're going to some bloody little dot of an island that nobody's ever heard of.
Oh, we're going to Africa to shoot all the wild animals.
indeed, all that, yeah, all that. So I'm sorry, you know, they were doing, if you like, the same thing, but they're not. In their own minds, they thought they weren't. So I think they've never been happy with this. Now they've got the gift, haven't they? It's like, save the planet.
It's a rock and the hard place, isn't it?
Climate change.
Because they made a lot of money out of it.
They made a lot of money out of it.
They made a lot of money out of it. They captured the working class, if you like, and the middle class, because it was our prize to go on holiday to these exotic places. And then in 2020 comes and they pull the rug from under us and corral us and get us used to not going away again.
Yeah, but for a very virtuous reason, though, Dom, because the virtuous reason is purely, you know, to save the world. We're helping you so that, you know, to save yourselves, because if not, any minute now, is it raining in Italy at the moment? Did they get rain there? Yeah, it's raining there at the moment, isn't it? They're having a terrible time, but no doubt every single thing. I hear we're in for a heat wave in Scotland. I think it's, you know, I hear the temperatures are going to go up to at least 21 next week. Yeah. And it's like every single thing, that there's a slight change in terms of what was happening, you know, maybe a year or two ago. I mean, literally a year or two ago, is like, this is it coming now. This is it coming. And I said to you, you know, the climate change thing in terms of, you know, when I put that email through with some things to talk about that were quite current at the time, was so strange to never hear on such a huge topic that they would say is the biggest topic currently in the history of the world. It's the biggest topic. Why do we not hear a whole range of competing views from other people who are expert in various scientific disciplines that are associated with climate?
Well, very,
that's
very,
it's incredible.
Very, yeah, very early on, Mark, the IPCC published a document going back, I think it was from the 1992 Kyoto summit. Anyway, I might be wrong there, but anyway. And it was basically Agenda 2030. Agenda for the 21st century. And they got, apparently they conned all, well, not apparently, they did, conned most of the scientists into signing a document that they didn't realise, that basically said that carbon was changing the weather. And a lot of these scientists went to court to try and get the names off this document. In fact, a large majority of them. And bear in mind, a lot of these scientists weren't even climate scientists. But what the controllers wanted was to be able to say there was an agreement between all these hundreds of different scientists that said that global climate warming change was because of a few plastic bottles on a beach somewhere.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, typically if you go into research and you think about, you know, I know I'm playing stereotypes, but you think about the, you know, the kids at school who have got, you know, certain types of abilities and they maybe end up in science and scientific research, usually one of the things about them is the loners. They're individuals. They're people who like to, whether they're right or wrong is not what we're talking about. They like to be, if you like, on their own. They're up for an argument, if I were to put it that way. They might not be up for a fight. They're usually hiding from that, but they're up for an argument. And so how incredible to hear these people who are in modern terms, you know, one of the biggest groups of individuals, very individualistic, suddenly all completely agreeing about something that we're told is the biggest topic that there possibly is. That smells very badly.
It smells very badly. And also, we've got the poster girl and the poster boy of all this, which we did a few podcasts on, Greta Thunberg. We've got to listen to, was she 12 or something like that at the time, barking and spitting at people, basically while she was talking, seething about house being on fire when it isn't really on fire and all this type of nonsense. And we uncovered, I don't know if you know this, that her whole family are a family of actors. So a dad is a film producer stroke actor, a mum's an actress stroke ballet dancer stroke singer from the Eurovision Song Contest. A granddad was an actor for Disney. He played a part in Monsters, Inc., the energy draining child's film. Her grandma was an actress. Her sister's an actress. They're all a family of actresses. And her great relation, Cervante Arenas something or other, I forget his surname now, he came up with, in the late 1800s, with the theory that climate change would change because of CO2. And it just so happens by coincidence that 100 and odd years later, they pushed Greta Thunberg out to sail across the Atlantic on a Rothschild yacht, by the way, made of carbon, just to take the piss even more, to tell us to stop using carbon.
That's incredible. I didn't know all those connections.
They're not connections, just a coincidence.
I was talking to a girl at work, and she must be only 18 or 19 or something, and she was studying environmental science. And anyway, I found this out later, but she said she was vegan. And I said, oh, why are you vegan? She goes, because of the cruelty to animals, like fair. And she goes, and climate change. I said, I can get the first bit. I don't really see...
Cheap fat.
Yeah. I don't really see the second bit about the climate change. And she said, well, I've been studying climate science. I goes, but what about all the scientists that don't agree? And she said, it's only 1%. I said, where did you hear that from? She said, we got told in class. But she was getting quite, really nice girl, but getting quite irate about it. And, you know, like, you can see how they're being brainwashed to consider someone like me as dangerous for not agreeing with them.
I think there was something else that wasn't directly to do with this, but it was to do with all the different things that, you know, you've been talking about, we've been talking about over a number of years, but certainly the last few years when it's come to mind, in terms of how people can be prepared to put themselves into this position. And it's like, you know, because it's so extreme. It is so extreme, and it's so difficult to argue with, because you're like, where do we even have any common ground here? Because they're so convinced that, you know, and then you know, it'll be thrown out to you that you're, you know, you're immediately, a label will come up, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're whatever, all the different labels, all the different devices that are used. Or this classic one, what's your discipline? What's your background? And just say this one now. This is not just to do with the climate stuff. This is to do with everything, whether it's to do with the trans stuff, to do with, you know, pandemics and so-called pandemics and COVID and everything, all the things that have been going on in the last few years. And it's like, you know, a way of shutting you down is, what's your academic disciplinary background?
What are you an expert in?
What are you an expert in? And I've noticed... And Sarah, my wife, says, what are you doing? I said, don't do that. You're going down a rabbit hole. I said, I'm not going down a rabbit hole. I was always brought up to, like, who is actually saying something? It doesn't mean that you need to, you know, deny someone's right to say something, or even deny and question whether what they've said is true or a fact, just based on their background. But it usually gives some interesting insights to help you with the, you know, the points being made. I've never known a time when we've got so many young, tosser, public school arse journalists with humanities degrees. I mean, I won't pull any punches. Humanities degrees and arts degrees. At least I've got a bloody social science PhD. I mean, I'm not a real scientist, but at least it's social science. You've got these arts and humanities degrees, give us a break, who are pontificating on scientific matters, natural science matters, matters that are to do with biochemistry, physics, and all the other disciplines in the natural sciences, the hard sciences that should be contributing to much of what's going on, you know, the trans stuff about biology in general. And it's like, I'm like, who is this person? And my wife's like, I can hear you shouting again. It's like, They've got a bloody 2-2 from Oxford in French and history. Get stuffed. Get stuffed. I can speak French. Get lost. Yeah. And what's their age? They must have lived and must have really encountered all sorts of amazing arguments and counterarguments. They're 20 bloody 8. Yeah. I'm not listening to them. Yeah. Not a chance.
And now they're not identifying as an hedgehog as well.
Hey?
And they're identifying as an hedgehog.
And just today though, Dom. Only
today. Just today, yeah.
Yeah, today. Otherwise you'd be able to at least anticipate what's coming. It'd be a prickly conversation and all that. But it's like, get lost. Get lost. And they're dupes. I don't care that they think they're so bright because they're Oxbridge and all the rest of it, public schoolies that they are mostly. They're dupes because they're being put into these positions, accelerated into positions that they would never in times gone by got to so quickly. And that is, you know, their egos, their position. And they actually really, their lack of self-awareness is incredible. They actually think that they can silence, because they don't debate, people who've spent 30 or 40 years narrowly studying one tiny thing to do with something in their argument. What ignorance and arrogance. Their time's up.
We've found as well, though, that these people, they're not trained in the expertise. They're trained how to dissect people and make them look wrong. It's a very clever way that you're looking at some of the BBC presenters that we're looking at the moment. The people like Hannah Fry, who was on BBC, she's a mathematician. But she's a mathematician, but she's trained presenter, you know? She's trained now to dissect, like a politician would answer questions and ask questions. And so these are the people now that...
in other words.
Exactly, they're not journalists. Yeah. They just keep that patronising approach constantly. They don't do any research, they don't do anything, just get a script given, and they're trained now to present it. And very dangerous people. You know?
I mean, this is all the totalitarian regimes, left, right, centre, whatever you want, all the totalitarian regimes throughout history and in current times and other autocratic states use these principles. So
it reminds me of Nazi Germany. When you read things about Nazi Germany, and say what anybody wants to say about Nazi Germany, or communist Russia, Stalinist Russia, where everyone was scared of saying anything. So everyone agreed with the Nazis because most of them were terrified, for argument's sake, or agreed with the... But most of them didn't agree, but they were terrified. So it was through fear, not through agreement or knowledge that they went along with it.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And that, you know, I remember putting this, I'm looking at the little emails that you sent back to me and the things that we spoke about. And we were talking about, you know, the nudge unit. And the notion of nudge and how, you know, I mean, it's advertising, isn't it? But how nudge has been used and how the psychologists the behavioral psychologists, those who don't believe that we actually have an inner core that is a spiritual, psychological core that is grounded in freedom. They don't believe that because they go, where is it? Measure it. And I go, watch, I'll show you it is now. I'm going to hit you really hard because I'm deciding to hit you really hard. I'm going to punch you in a way, you Nancy boy that you've never had. Watch this. That's my freedom speaking now. And no, that's because you come from that kind of culture and that kind of environment. And you can think that, but your nose is bleeding, you nasty boss. So you have to edit that little aspect. But it's like, I'm sorry, they don't believe in this, except truly deeply within themselves, they really do know it's real. So the nudge thing can really only work. And this is the provocative one. And for some of your listeners out there, I'm sure some people have got really strong ideas on this and better ideas than me. I think this can't work unless you prepare people for this over almost generations and you accelerate it. And basically you gut people that they no longer have any sense of self. They're not sure who the hell they are. They're empty. They're running around without any deep source of meaning, whatever that may be. And now, guess what disappears? The virtue and psychological quality of courage. Because courage means you have to stand on your own. You can't be courageous in a group of four. You can have four courageous people all working together.
In a group of 100.
yeah, absolutely. They can make up 100.
The hardest thing is as well, Mike, is convincing youngsters, like I'm saying about that youngster at work, is because you first got to convince them that it's a psyop. There's some kind of psychological operation there. And you try and convince someone, a younger end, that the LGBT, the Black Lives Matter, or global climate warming change is a psyop. Because then they just shut down. And
Well, think how anxiety inducing that is, Chris, to them, yeah. because they've never even been given the
option,
you know, the
point. Think about
yeah, never. Not even to have it as a kind of debating point, if you want. You know,
but like you were just saying, they can't debate it because it's just you're wrong. I've been to college, you haven't at this point, and I've studied environmental science. My teacher told me there's only 1% of scientists agree with you, even though that's bollocks, and everyone knows it's bollocks.
Maybe I drill back too close to my own discipline and my own background. We all do this to some degree, and then you see it through that prism when somebody else comes along and says, hang on, what about this, Mark? And it's like, no, that's good. That's good. So I'm already knowing I'm doing this, I'm going to say this. But a lot of this is to do with Auden in the 30s said, about the Western world, he was talking about England, Britain maybe, but England, and he said, we're living in the age of anxiety. And that was in the 30s before,
wow,
you know.
Imagine if we're around now.
Indeed. So that's Auden, the poet, saying, you know, we're living in the age of anxiety. This is the age of anxiety. And one of the things about anxiety, this type of anxiety, is anxiety can be a really good sign, because there's anxiety that crushes you where you just can't perform. And you know it as a chef. You know it in terms of, you know, it's like I'm so anxious that I haven't got the skill and ability to do what's in front of me. I can't even do basic stuff. But there's another anxiety that's around, I'm not quite sure about what's coming next. That is really good, because that is the anxiety, if you like, associated with learning, associated with true education, because that means that you're always, if you like, approaching something that you don't fully understand. You might understand a lot of it, but you don't fully, which means you're open to a debate, an argument, a new point, but it's uncomfortable. It's not desperately uncomfortable, but it's a little uncomfortable, because the truth is, anxiety and excitement together is wonderful. You know, that's, I think I said this to somebody recently. I said, that's Christmas morning when you're coming down to wonder what you've got. That's anxiety and excitement together. That's
butterflies.
Butterflies. It's butterflies, but it's like, take it away. It's like, no, don't take it away. I love it. But anxiety around, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to hear here, because it might challenge me. I might not understand it fully. That's good. But that has been taken away, because I think they think that's mental health. Ill health. I think that leads to mental ill health. It actually leads to flourishing.
Yeah. Or we've been told it leads to mental health. For a reason of control, i.e. drugging people up.
You're personally attacking me now because you're disagreeing with me.
Yeah, absolutely. And you need to have these techniques and devices for you to deal with the symptoms of that. And it's like, no, these symptoms. And remember, I can't remember the psychologist, it was a great psychologist. He knocked me off my seat once and was like, somebody who's long time dead, and said, no, often symptoms to do with psychological issues are a good sign. It's like, yeah, symptoms are a good sign. It means the body or the mind and the brain is actually working and fighting. You know, it's actually fighting back to health. It's like, oh, never thought of it that way. I always thought symptoms are a sign that there's a real deep problem coming your way.
Well, you know yourself, if you get anxious about something, like take cooking, for instance, you're cooking and you it's all getting on top of you. And you just take a deep breath and you go, all right, sort my shit out. I'll have a little clean up and everything will be fine. And just motor my way through it. So you're teaching yourself to get over anxiety. Whereas, like you were saying, now it's just labeled as a mental problem. And that shouldn't exist. You shouldn't ever get to that point of stress, because it should be wiped off the table.
Without a doubt. And all the chit-chat about mental toughness in my field, they're all chatting about mental toughness. I'm like, stop talking about mental toughness. You make it sound like you can learn it in a weekend. It's about courage, which means stepping forward to do something that you're not sure at the time is going to be the right thing, but you still do it. You still try to do the right thing, not knowing. And so you go through this experience, and every time you go through it, you're ready to do it again and again and again. That's resilience. They're making it sound like you can teach it in a bloody classroom in 5 minutes. Garbage. And get out some trees.
If you think back, Mark, I think it was 2021 when we first met? Summer night in a house. Yeah. And if you look at those people...
Sounds romantic.
Yeah. Well, it sounds romantic. But there were me, you, Alex, Steve, and Alex's girlfriend. Yeah. Hi, Alex, you're listening. And that other chap, I forget his name now.
Was Marcus there?
Marcus, I think it was Marcus.
Yeah. And
all from different backgrounds, all different, but all agreeing. And it felt like we were the resistance at that point. And it felt like we shouldn't be meeting talking about these things. That's how it had got us. That's how compressed this had turned us into, hadn't it?
It was completely bonkers. And you said something really important there, Don, really, really important, which is, if talk about diversity, that was absolutely diversity. We never even got down to what our spiritual religious beliefs are, our ancestry. And what. We did eat it. I can tell you now, if you did that and drilled it down, you'd go, whoa, what
a
diversity.
Not a crossword either.
Not a crossword. But what a so superficial stuff that doesn't count, we were really deeply diverse. This lot of maniacs think that that's what really counts. What really counts was the stuff beneath that, which was, do you want to ask a question on that? Yeah, I'm not sure about this. Let's discuss this in dialogue.
Yeah.
That's what was happening. And that's why it was so enjoyable. And
refreshing.
All sorts of different things. Refreshing. Refreshing.
It's especially probably at that point in time as well.
Absolutely.
Everyone feels like they're going bonkers.
But you're right. Imagine it feeling like you were in the French Resistance.
Mm. And like you were going to get, all right, we weren't going to get raided, but at that particular point in time, it had that feel to it that you might have to pick arms up at some point because they might actually start wanting you to be dragged out of your house to have something stuck in your arm that you didn't want.
Well, should I say this on your program? You can edit this one if you think I'm going too far.
We'll edit it, don't worry. Unless you want to edit
it. All right, well, whatever, because I'm sure some of the viewers will think, no, you're going far too far now. But I remember thinking, so why have I been born in this era when nearly everybody who's lived in so many different countries across the world, let's just stay European, let's just stay a British context at the moment, that it's very rare to get to a certain age and not be in a war and not be in a battle. And not actually, for example, like, why have I been, how lucky am I to be gifted? You know, going back to your ancestors and in different sides and go, they were involved in, oh my goodness, that must have been tough at 17, 21. 20. Wow. And I've not faced that. My goodness. And that's the people doing the fighting, never mind the pain for those left at home, brothers, sisters, mothers, whatever. And it's like being saved from that. I'm not so sure now.
Yeah.
I can say already that our war is a war, a psychological, spiritual war that's going on right now, which in a sense is
more
in
destructive,
some ways harder to fight.
Yeah. More destructive.
Yeah.
Well,
more
they've learned lessons from the past, I think, Matt. And like I've said before, it's the same results, isn't it? A cull and divvy up all the lands and just rechange the system, the Great Reset, if you like. It's the same. It's the same thing that's happened after every world war.
You're probably right, Kristen. That what you know would people. I mean, I can't think that they would do it for lots of good reasons, but I think for reasons that are not good to do with things I've been saying, like courage and duty and all those words that as long as they're not taken too far, are really powerful words. Would people, ordinary people, from, let's just randomly pick some places that, you know, I know from my early part of my life, would they go from Castleford and Pontefract and stand in trenches at 17, 18? And some of these guys had never been to bloody Leeds. And they're in Gallipoli, they're in northern France to fight for an idea that we're like, we're doing it for king and country. But if you ask them much more than that, they wouldn't really be able to say too much. Yeah. And they're about to give their lives in a really, really horrible
and
way.
And I guarantee you, Mark, as well, if you ask them in 1914, then ask them in 1916 and 1918 what their feelings were, you get three different answers.
No,
like
you're right.
Vietnam, yeah.
No, you're right. No, you're right. And that, I mean, you mentioned Vietnam, Chris. It's really interesting because some of the people, I know they're probably mostly just about dead, if not dead now, because of that age group, you know, because it's the 60s, really, and 70s. But that many of the people who were there and had incredible, inverted commas, you know, war experiences, involved in all sorts of battles and did amazingly heroic things and saved people on the battle. That these are the people you would think would talk so favourably about what they were doing and what they were there, and they don't.
It was a steady decline, wasn't it? Yeah, the initial propaganda bang, I'm sure with most wars, and then a slow realisation, hang on, are we doing something evil here? And then it filters down until it ends. I don't think they got away with that with now. That's probably why they
Fairness, they got away with Iraq, which was a similar type of war for 10 years, first one as well. And, you know, just a million people got destroyed in that war.
They basically used as private contractors, aren't they? Which is, you know.
Well, they've been utilised, aren't they? Yeah. What was it Smedley Butler said, General Smedley Butler? Wall Street makes the plans and sends in the Marines.
Well, that's a great line. Can I? And I don't know if you've covered this. I've listened to, you know, a fair few, but I might have missed this, and maybe you don't want to cover this, but not so much in kind of conventional detail. But this stunned the living daylights out of me. Stunned me to bits. It still does now. So we go to Afghanistan. Britain has been in Afghanistan three times in 150 years and had to go out of Afghanistan. I think it's called a retreat. I think it's called defeat. But they'll call it a retreat, or they'll call it, you know, strategic or whatever. I'm sorry, those tough mountain guys, seriously tough. I don't care. This sounds like a traitorous thing to say. It isn't. It absolutely isn't at all. It's a reality that we saw. Those people fighting for their land in those mountains. Not saying they're right. I'm not saying I believe in their beliefs. I'm not talking about the Taliban. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about a country and countries going to another country. And again, they have to leave that country. So all the wealth of the West goes in, is there for years and years and years, and then goes out in 2 seconds, and hardly a word is said. Where's the should it cost in lives on all sides, pain, huge pain, wealth, money that's been spent, massive. Where's all the discussion? It lasted for about a day in the media.
Well, the main concern was getting them fucking puppies out of there, Matt.
Yeah.
Well, Penny Farthing were trying to get them puppies out on that airplane. That was the biggest discussion, wasn't it?
Chris, that might have been 50%. I bet you somebody could go and do a content analysis of the media and it would probably be 50 bloody percent.
Yeah.
And that would, I tell you what, and that would, to some tough Afghani, it'd go, there you are. There's how broken, not your soldiers, not your people doing the stuff on the ground. I'm not saying anything about them, but your culture at large and your deep state and the people who are bossing you about, that's how broken they are. They're more bothered about that instead
well,
of
you
the
think
death and injury.
The young lads who came from England and America and died there, and then all the Afghanis that died there, over what was it about? Does anyone know? Can anyone tell
no,
you what
no,
it's about?
I've never seen...
Did anyone declare war?
I've never seen a decent, proper, in-depth conversation amongst military people, politicians.
No.
And where's all the peace people from? Where's all the peacenicks from the 70s, the baby boomers? Where the shit are that? Where is that?
They were wearing masks in 2020.
They were wearing masks, hiding on the bloody bed, hiding to get another year before they get euthanasia that they want. Hang on a minute. Make your shitting mind up. We think euthanasia is a great thing for that person down the road. Hang on a minute. We think that nobody should have two houses, but we've got three in Cornwall. Hang on a minute.
Yeah, I know.
I know there's great people from that generation. There was about four of them. I'm after that group. Yeah. The biggest group of hypocrites that have walked the earth. I'm so glad I'm the generation just younger than
but
them.
But I remember doing when we did a podcast once, I can't remember the last one or one before that, Mark. And we got a load of shit for having a go at that baby boomer generation. Well, it was us three that did it, and somebody said, "I'm a bit." And we're not talking about all of them. I'm sure there are still some out there. I'm sure there still are some out there. But
right,
going back to what you were saying about the generational decline, that baby boomer generation was the first one. They got a lot of them got drugged out of the mines in the 60s. They were carrying it on in the 70s, and drugged pharmaceutically and illegal drugs, listening to modern music, all the stuff that MK Ultra. The mind control operation that went on, subjected them to. They passed that on to the next generation and the next. And here we are today with, my son came home the other day and he said, have you heard about these people who are identifying as furries? And I went, no. And he started laughing. Well, they identify as animals. They're called furries.
Right, right. Why not? Why not? Fuck it, might as well.
So, right. And that's where we are today, where we've got an admiral in America who's wearing high heel shoes and tights.
I know.
And they're meant to be in control of a fucking army.
I know. I mean, if you go back some generations, there were probably one
it's
or
a
two
carry
who
on
did
film.
That. There's one or two who did that probably privately, but that's another story.
Yeah,
there's definitely some judges did that privately, but that's definitely another story.
Yeah.
But no, you're making the point. Of course, to the baby boomers listening in, the point is, you're the good baby boomers because you're the ones who are actually, you know, thinking as you should do based on they actually were the last generation to have a pretty reasonable education. they actually had a good time. If they, a lot of them went, they got to university, because so few went to university in those days. You know, they got good grants. They had a very, I mean, it was, they came out, they got incredible jobs, not in all cases, but many more than what's happened now with what universities have become, which is essentially staying at school till you're 22. And, oh, guess what? The top universities, you get jobs, but the rest, it's like being at
say a... Say it like it is, Mark.
Well, it is. I mean, I've been in it. I couldn't say that then, could I?
Yeah.
But I used to look at some of my students and go, there's some great people here, and there's some people who've been, you know, have been sold a pup that are misled, should not be here. Their happiness in life was not, did not need to involve this.
They're not academics.
No.
Yeah.
No, I meet them all working in bars, to be fair, Matt.
What amazing snobbery this was, intellectual snobbery, to basically go, if you're a chef, if you're a plumber, if you're an electrician, if you want to be a housewife, even a bit, whatever. I mean, oh, wonderful, tremendous, but in brackets, is that it? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
What intellectual snobbery was that?
Yeah, very much so. Because we need everybody.
Well, they just
need one type of person.
They gangsterized universities, didn't they? So everyone went and everyone paid and et cetera. Just turned into a gangster operation.
Every year, what is it, 500,000 new students now going to universities, roughly. Half a million, and it's an extra 2 billion every year in loans.
Well, I see Blair not long ago, I think in the middle of the madness, right in the middle of it, he said something. It's like, what gives him the right to say this? I'm like, I think 70% of 18-year-olds should be going to university. Of course, what he doesn't mean is he doesn't mean Oxford and Cambridge and Durham and the Russell Group. He doesn't mean that because that's loaded with, public school. Oh, no, it's not loaded with public school. It's loaded with people who might as well be at public school because they live in the best areas of the country. Oh, why do they live there? Because they go there because the schools are not on fire, because the schools are able to teach, because there's, like, you know, all sorts of facilities and a life within the community that allows that to take place in different ways. And so guess who misses out again? The people at the bottom
There is no excuse unless it's a planned effort to destroy culture. Because we've been schooling kids now for 150 years properly, if you want to say it that way, and the rest probably, and we still can't get it right. It's gone backwards. And I wrote something down here that the quality is disappearing. Me and Chris were talking about it the other day, and just like that guy's experience on his plane there and everything else that you experience nowadays, everything's declined, yet we're told it's improving, everything. And schooling, realistically, we should be turning kids out now that are, whatever. Every one of them should be should be able to talk differently. Just be more educated, more rounded individuals. Yeah. Because the Steiner schools, all these schools exist. We should be picking bits, the best bits. Why are kids taught about the psychology side of life, what you were just discussing
think of it this way, without getting into, you know, our biographies online. No, people will certainly know yours and what have you. But we've had quite different experiences in terms of, like, I've got three degrees. So what? But, you know, fine.
Our mum were in 3 degrees.
Indeed.
I was trying to think of a 3 degree joke.
I just knew I had to come that, didn't it? It's like 3 degrees. It's just an absolute open test, that, isn't it? Right, perfect. And so think what we're doing. So we're having a conversation. So we've had different educational experiences, and yet we've had something the same. Because how on earth, without prying into our bits and pieces and what we did and didn't do, how are we able to have this kind of dialogue together as absolute equals in terms of our views and understanding each other?
Because that spiritually, there's a connection.
Well, that's disappearing, Dom. Disappearing. The Oxbridge bunch can't now have conversations, and they won't even engage in conversations with, as they see it, these people that they speak on behalf of. It's so patronizing. Yeah. It's so patronizing.
Yeah. I mean, you probably come across more people like that than me and Chris ever will. I mean, Chris lives in Cambridge, and he probably don't come across people. Well, you probably do, don't you? When you were working,
like,
come
what
across people like, well, just that they think they're higher educated, so they are obviously better than everybody else. But
I mean,
you will, because that was your world, wasn't it? You know, you'll understand that more than we do, Mark, and probably people listening as well.
I meet youngsters who are just going through uni and college and stuff.
The part I see is that a lot of these youngsters are shoehorned into, right, college, waste your time, go to university, waste your time, and they promised all these things at the end of it with for a stupid course that means nothing. Means nothing.
Well, also a fact you've got a job, which is for example, which has got 10 posts in England and 200 people doing the course.
Yeah.
But one thing I will say as a positive, I've met a few youngsters lately who are looking to do apprenticeships. I mean, that literally vanished out of the discussion, didn't it? But it's obviously coming back because people are realizing, hang on a minute, I might as well just get a grounded job that can earn me I'm not an academic. I'll get a grounded job that can earn me a living and a decent living.
Well, I used to think, you know, this was me to myself in my room. I used to go, no, this is too grand. I'm not having that. This is understood, and I've just worked it out now. Somebody understood this in advance. But the older I've got, the more I'm thinking, I think this might be the case. So wait a minute. They could foresee that if you get people who are, you know, going to do the kind of jobs we are talking about that are absolutely essential, absolutely necessary, and hugely important in all sorts of different ways. And we're talking about, you know, electricians and plumbers and decorators, all the different things, and chefs, and but all these jobs that have got a skilled manual element to it, and much more than that, of course, you know, working teams and all other things. It's like what you often get there when people do those sorts of things is you get people who are quite independent minded, people who at quite a young age are earning some money, beginning to think about serious things.
Move on, say become self-employed.
Exactly. Don't say that scary word, Mark. Independent.
Independent. No, exactly, Dom. No, definitely. And it's like, you know, that's one of the things that the kids say, as it were. That's what children say. We all said it. Can't wait to get away from school, even if you were reasonably good. I can't wait to get away from it so that I can really live.
Go to really Butlins.
Well, also, Dom was saying in one of his things quite a long time ago now about, you know, the whole psyop of dividing and splitting up the family that's been going on since the '60s, and university was even used for that if you think about it, because they're encouraging kids to go to university 100 miles away.
These are working class kids as well, and middle class kids, not your normal boarding school type kids.
Yeah.
So was this part of the agenda, Matt, where they go away and a lot of them don't come back? I meet so many people in Cambridge, I came to university and I just never went home.
Well, I read a demographic, there was a study done on that, and what they did, what they realised were when they started popping up these, like Huddersfield University, that isn't really a university, but it is, and it just owns all the town. But that something like 30% of all the university grads end up staying in that area. So they knew they didn't want the same thing as what happened with the miners, where the miners came out en masse and terrified the government.
Well, the family gets bigger and bigger and bigger,
because
they're solider and solider.
Yeah,
and then any trouble in a village or a town, and they're there ready with the fucking torches and the pitchforks.
Well, I think that's why they made the PALS regiments to absolutely massacre those people. But it didn't work because they all grouped together even more after they got back. But because they made the PALS regiments in the mills and the towns, and they basically wiped whole streets out, didn't they? And machine gunned them down in an hour in the Somme.
Oh, villages. Yeah,
all villages. Yeah. But yeah, it's interesting anyway, that side of it. But going back to what you were saying, Matt, the thought that has gone into multi-generational. In fact, I mean, when you research backwards, you find a fine line somewhere in the mid-1800s where it seems to have started a different way of thinking. They came up with dinosaurs, they came up with eugenics, they came up with all these things that from Darwin and what have you. And it seemed to change. The tact seemed to change.
It's really interesting you say that, because, you know, I've mentioned it a lot of times, and I'm sure it's not to everybody's taste, but... But I remember reading, because he's very ironic, and I like his English style of humour. It's very, very dry. And G.K. Chesterton, and he said, you know, he's we were saying, Dom, weren't we, before we came on, that these people, you know, were in company with all the great and the good at that time. So they bump into them. So he's at some do, and he's meeting all these professors, and it's some conference, and it's on prehistoric, and he makes the line, he goes, if it's prehistoric, we don't know anything about it because it's before history. That's brilliant. Whoosh, right through them, right through them. Now, you know, we know he's making a point.
But, that,
a
but, point but now way. You watch a bit of TV and see Brian Cockend on there, and he's like,
yeah.
And with these asteroids collided 3.5 billion years ago. What? Are you mental? They just use those numbers.
So I always disagree with that, Chris, because I think it was 3.6 billion. You know? and that's how I feel today.
Yeah, that's how I feel
but
today.
But then we know what happened 3.6 billion years ago, but then a volcano erupts and kills a load of folk, or there's a tornado. So why it doesn't balance out, does it? It's predictive programming.
Were you there? Were you there, Brian? No, I wasn't there. Before we came on, I want to get this in before we finish. We were talking about artists, actually, weren't we? And you had a great Jackson Pollock story that you were talking with your mates a few years ago.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't directly about him, but it was about his him as a representative, if you like, of that type of art. And I was asking, I was really, really being genuine. I wasn't trying to wind stuff up like I sometimes am for a bit of fun, but I was being genuine. I was. And we had a couple of beers. And these lads were, one was a fine artist and one was a graphic artist. And one was a really, really close friend, really grounded lad, Yorkshire lad, and really, really grounded. And right, I'm going to go for this again. These boys really know their stuff. They're experts. Right, lads, you know, I'm useless at art. And I know I'm a bit arty with my football and stuff, but I'm not a drawer or a painter. Right. Like, the more obtuse modern art. So, honestly, what is the difference between that piece of work there and a 4 or 5 year old running about with a load of paints just scattering all over the place? What is the difference? I said, objectively, aesthetically, you tell me, go on. And they're like, so we spent ages with drinking more beer, and I wasn't getting a proper answer at all. And the answer I got in the end, which was brilliant, I thought, you don't realise what you've just done, because I'll never forget this. And it's like, Mark, you see, the difference is, you see, that great artist, even though it looks exactly the same as what some babied merchant could do when they come in at night, or some five-year-old kid, the difference is they've got the technical and artistic skill to paint something like the Mona Lisa, to paint something brilliant.
That's bollocks,
I'm like, hang on. I said, so when I'm standing in some, you know, some art gallery and I'm looking at this nonsense on the wall, I'm to go, it's shit, but
if you really wanted to,
imagine you, Chris. Right, Chris, what's this? This is Scottish pine beans. I like Scottish pine beans. Most people don't. Yeah, but honestly, if you really wanted, I can produce absolute the top Michelin star pine beans. I decided to give you Scottish pine beans. Anyway, that'll be 150 quid, please, because I am special. So
fellas, look at this painting on my wall here, right? See that? Let me try and show you. There's a painting on my wall there, my nipper. You see it there? Can you just see it in the background?
Yeah.
Like a big splodge, right?
Yeah. So, nice colours.
Yeah, it's nice colours. It looks good. And my missus put it in a frame. Basically, my two-year-old, I put a piece of cardboard in my shed and she used to come in and I'd give her a paintbrush and I've got photos of her doing it. She splat it on it, framed it. Someone came in a while ago and went, where'd you get that from? And they obviously, they thought it was a piece of proper real, well, it is real art. Yeah. Manipa did it.
But why didn't you sell it? You could have got
it. It looks nice in a frame. And they went, yeah, but where's that? I said,
I'd love to see somebody analyse that and come up with
it. I know. It looks good, though. I even turned it upside down, so it's the wrong way around to what she did it. I kept giving her different colours and going, just splat them on, go on. And she loved it. And it looks nice, I'm not, you know. But someone thought it was.
I'm not against that. I've got a piece in the house. It's like absolutely like that. And it's like, I love the colours. I love what it does with it. But It wasn't that. It was like, what is the difference between that and this? And there's some technical work in this, but some of it is like, come on, this is a game. This is the Emperor's New Clothes. This is because none of you dare say, I'm sorry, that's the bollocks. Flu. Yeah, that's the flu. That's a cold. Yeah. Stop it. Yeah. That mask cannot do this. We all know if you go
it's the same thing, isn't it?
That can't do it.
Yeah, same it's the thing. Same thing.
Is it Jackson? It's another racket.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know Jackson Pollock. You and Crystal know it better than me.
He was CIA funded, wasn't he?
But we were CIA funded.
Really?
CIA funded. So,
I think the reason that, and I found this out a long, long time ago, because I remember thinking, what? That doesn't make any sense. But apparently the idea behind it was that he was a free-thinking artist and did whatever he wanted. So it was against communism. So the CIA funded him to produce his.
But then obviously they've inserted that type of art into now the culture of people to say that that is now that's good. That's proper art.
And to be fair, Fatty, from I've seen a few Jackson Pollock, and they don't. They're actually all right, right? You know, there is something there.
There's some stuff
he's got worse since then. That's the worst thing. Mm. He's got a lot worse, you know.
Well, it's the Andy Warhol thing, isn't it? Andy Warhol thing.
Painted a tin of beans. Painted a tin of beans, and you've got Tracy Emin putting a bed in that she rattled a few blokes in and stuff. So you've reached a point of absolute ridiculousness now, haven't you? And I told the story before about my son was with, he was with my friend, and they were in the Tate Modern, and my son was about six, I think. And I forget the name of the guy. He paints blue squares, right, in a particular blue that he discovered. So they'll explain this blue that he's made, you know. And to a normal person, it's like, it's a blue square. And my son stood there in Tate Modern at 6 years old and said, why is everyone staring at that blue square? And everyone just like filtered off.
They might as well say, well, you knobheads looking at this blue square.
Look at this for you knobheads.
Can I have a can of pop?
It's the same thing, isn't it? You know, why are you wearing a mask, you knobhead? Why are you doing this, you knobhead? Just to, you know, an adult will never dream of standing there in front of that painting and saying that, would they, with other adults around.
Is it the Tate Modern?
Yeah. Someone's hung that on the wall.
Tate and Lyle, isn't it? I think it's part of Tate and Lyle.
Is it real?
So. I didn't know that.
I think so. I think it is. Right. Don't quote me on that. I'll probably get shafted now. Somebody will send me. No, but I think it is.
The sugar connection.
The sugar plantation connection.
Right. So you've just suggested that it's just a money filtering system.
Money filtering system stands for something other than what it really is. But again, all these things are funded by, as we found finding out, CIA or some, again, we're talking about George Orwell, you know, the myth behind Orwell. He was obviously some kind of, it was an operation, the security operation of some kind. And
everything's a racket.
Everything's a racket that we're finding as you're finding. Because like we say, we're looking at it from all our different angles. You can look at it from your training angle. I'll look at it from my training stroke experience angle.
Yeah.
We're coming to the same answer, that it's a generational, you said it, half an hour ago, 40 minutes ago, it seems to be a generational plan. And there's a famous guy in Scotland, actually, who did a fantastic talk. I'll try and find it and email it. I've got it on our website. Alan Watts.
I've seen it. I've seen it as well. No, it's good. And he was good. And he's baby boomer. And one with courage and a great guy. But what difficulties he faced and had. But I think, I know we're not here to be going, this is negative, positive. We're not viewing it like that, are we? We're just saying what we see and where it is, and people get what they can out of it, and they have their own thoughts as they're entitled to. But I do think that in amongst all of this, because this is classic of this type of group of people throughout history, they always, I know this, I've used this phrase before, but I think it's pretty good. They always overplay their hand. Mm-hmm. They always go too far. They always leave so far away from reality that in the end, they build a decent group of people, which is always a minority. It's always the 5%. It's always the 1 in 20. But it builds maybe to 2 or 3 in 20 eventually down the line. And that is enough. In fact, we don't even need 3 in 20. That is enough. Because the majority of people are reasonable human beings, just kind of want to get on with, you know, what's happening tomorrow and get their work done and get to the weekend and place. And that is, the people, they know that. They know that most people just go, leave me alone, stop meddling, stop coming at me with abstract mad ideas. Let's just move forward as we can. Stuff that's not good, we can see it, we remove it if we can. Stuff that's good, we keep it. Don't get out of apprenticeship.
It's funny, isn't it, that the last 3 years of them batting everyone around the head, which is, you know, made people more stressed, more anxious, weaker or whatever. Nut jobs like us, all it's done is make me realise I was right all along. And I'm now five times tougher than I was 3 years ago. You know?
You've been, you know, it's the classic thing of like, how do you harden steel? You know, how do you harden iron? You bang it, you hit it. It's true. Yeah. I mean, that's what they did in the ancient with their swords. They bang them, not too hard, you break it, but you make it stronger.
How do you break porcelain? And you bang that and it just shatters.
One thing...
That's an interesting one. That's too good. I like that.
One thing a chap said we know, Lee... He said it's probably the first time in history that we've actually been ruled by the weaker race or part of the race, because generally
that's interesting.
Physically weaker
No, but I physically weaker. But I think I've said in one of your other podcasts, these are the tossers who hid around the back of the bike sheds.
Yes.
These are the kids that, like, you know, that were absolutely obsessed with their times tables when the rest of us would try to get away from that. Yeah. They hid away from everything. They were hiding in you know, in the classroom when they should have been out doing
the
stuff.
The nerds, if you like, at times.
Indeed, nerds and geeks. And it's like, we've got them in the target. If they're nerds and geeks and they did a few things on the side, like ride motorbikes really fast or something, brilliant. And if that's a female, brilliant, even more brilliant. Go on, bring it on. But, you know, why not? Why not? But this group here, you're absolutely right, physically weak. Now, give me another Chesterton one. Chesterton said, the most important, he was drawing on Aristotle and Aquinas and all sorts of great minds. It's like, and the most important virtue that everything else rests on is courage. Not intelligence, nothing. Courage is the most important virtue that everything else rests on.
Yeah, courage to say no. When you don't
courage
agree with
say
something.
No. But, courage but in, to say yes, courage to say no. But yeah, we've just seen that in the last few years.
It was the ramifications of saying no that was... people listening who had the courage to do what we had to do. That so the ramifications of saying no probably was not the easy part, but the easy part is the ramifications of the problems it caused with your family, work, whatever. That was the courage part. Going out into the wide world and going into a shop and being told to wear a mask and saying, no, I'm not wearing one.
Yeah.
You can't make
one. Yeah. I used to get anxious every time I pulled up at a shop because I knew I wasn't going to wear one.
But it were anxious, but you were actually, like Mark said earlier, that you were, it was a good...
I had no choice.
Yeah.
In my mind, I had no choice.
Yeah. It was, you're not making me wear a mask, so I'm not wearing one, so it's irrelevant.
Mm. No, the social coercion, though, that's been used has been, I mean, everybody's always known about that throughout history and society. That's you know, been abused, if you like. Been used for good things as well, but it can easily be abused. And that this has been an incredible year of that, but it can only work when you've got people who are so emptied. So it's reminding us how our culture has been emptying itself, but not completely, because there's still some people left. And the brilliant thing is, like your listeners, they'll be from all walks of life and all different groups. I'm not getting into identity stuff now. We're just talking about normal identity.
Yeah.
But they'll be from everywhere. And that's brilliant, because that is really refreshing, because if it's coming from a load of different sources, it usually means there's something in it. Yeah, if it's all the same three people.
Yeah, one group of...
and that's what we've been...
I Googled a while ago, sent to Dom, about coercion in the First World War. And you don't... On a blanket way of looking at it, you'd think that if you didn't join the First World War, you got shot. That's kind of how I thought it happened, but it wasn't true. People didn't join up, right? And imagine how strong they must have been at that time to join up with all that propaganda.
Yeah,
and everyone joining up and dying, and they were still joining up, still joining.
They actually paid people to all the women who were freedom fighting for feminism and stuff. They paid them to throw white feathers at people who walked past who weren't in the forces.
But also, the ones who didn't, they went to prison, right?
Yeah.
But then they
give objectors,
conscientious objectors. But they gave them an option as well, that you can go to war as a nurse or a doctor to help the injured. And the ones who really stood the ground said, "I'm not even doing that. I don't want anything to do with it."
Yeah,
imagine the balls on those guys doing that at that point in time with all that propaganda. But you don't hear about this, there. You don't hear about them. No. All you hear, I mean, I had it in the back of my head. If you didn't join, you got shot. It wasn't that simple. If you deserted, you got shot. Which means you've then signed the contract to go to war. Even if you go as a doctor or a nurse.
The philosophy and bargain.
You've still signed up to go. So if you die, it's your own fault. Whereas the guys who said no to everything and would rather go to prison.
That were us.
They were the ones that said flatly no, nothing.
Yeah. That must have been quite a life for them to lead afterwards as well.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Like you said, they're throwing feathers at them. Massive propaganda machine after him.
Yeah. No, no, everybody thinks courage just means saying yes, but sometimes the courageous thing is to say no.
Courage is saying F you.
Yeah.
Whichever way. Now, listen, boys, I'm going to have to go.
Yeah.
I hear my visitors have arrived. And
nice one, man. Who's arrived? Who's coming to your house?
I've got some visitors coming. We're going to go and play some golf tomorrow. I think we're going to go to the golf course. I don't know if we play much golf.
Right, yeah. you'd be playing more golf than I would, because I'm useless at golf.
I've never tried. I'd never tried golf. I'm not a sportsman, but I would like. I kind of like the idea of golf.
Well, that was. I nearly said you're not a sportsman, but go and play golf.
Well, exactly. No. It's just, yeah, you're on well, your own.
It's just psychologically, spiritually, mostly. It's a dream of a game because you're not going to master it. It's going to keep you humble. You think you've got it. You've got no chance of getting it. Even the greatest never get it, and yet. You can play with people at all ages and stages, more or less. It's got so many things going for it. No wonder people get
obsessed.
It has that potential.
But my wife's mum works on a golf course, by the way.
Matt. Oh, really?
In Croydon, yeah. It's a nice one as well. It's a lovely golf course.
Well, you're in. Go and have a go.
She actually lives on the ground in quite a nice little house. Yeah.
Well, I'd say this sport is one. You know, some sports you just like go out and eventually the body will do it. I think this one it's really helpful if you can get a good coach, a good somebody to work with who gets that it's not just technical; it's about other call them psychological aspects to this as well.
Yeah.
But to learn some of that because it's it's difficult just to go out and do it yourself.
Yeah, I think I lifted too many weights, too stiff. Anyway, we'll let you get off, mate. Because
all right,
enjoy your day tomorrow.
Yeah, and good to see you both.
Yeah,
good
you
to
see too, you.
We'll catch up soon, yeah?
Yeah, we'll do. Yeah, in person somewhere down in your patch.
Yeah, just let me know.
Yeah,
let me know in some time and then we can arrange something.
I'll give you some time, and arrange something.
Yeah, cool.
Beings. Yeah.
We'll get Alex there as well.
Yeah, that'd be good. All right, then.
Cool, mate. Take it easy.
See you there, boys.
See you soon, mate.
Bye. We will see you next time. Bye. See you next time. Bye.